Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And Tony, we are back once again. Last episode of the season.
Oh my god.
It's so good. But before we get to all of that.
I don't want it to end.
You don't like the end?
I said I don't want it to end.
You don't want it to end. Oh my gosh. Well, it doesn't have to end quite yet, because before we start talking about it, we just have to remind everybody to, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We actually just gave away some dope stickers.
Yes.
Congratulations, Calvin, for winning those stickers.
Mm-hmm.
Dope stickers. So if you want to, you know about more giveaways in the future, just know what's going on with us. Just talk to us, reach out to us, hear about our thoughts about anything. Let's do it. Two, a lot of people, at least on Twitter, have been really jiving with our analysis of Korra, the higher highs, lower lows kind of thing. and it sounds like our episode actually helped some people convince their friends to watch the show. So that was really great. I'm glad to hear from you all who have been messaging me on Twitter and tweeting at me and stuff like that, letting me know that, yeah, like, our friends are watching Korra and your podcast helped them see, like, maybe it could be worthwhile. And because I think a big part is we address that there's problems, but we also talk about how it's still so good. So there's that. And number three, on my personal note, I launched my podcast last week, Friday.
Yeah. Woo.
It is called Yo, Let Me Tell You. You can go to anchor.fm/yo, let me tell you to find it. It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. It's on like all the platforms that we're on. So I'd really appreciate it if you all dropped it a follow. Let me know what you think. Follow me on my Twitter and anything like on my Twitter, like Sleeves McFly, to let me know what you think about it.
I really liked it. I really liked the first episode.
Did you really?
Yes, I actually really did.
That's good.
Like, I was like, I had something to, I was eating and I had to wash the dishes. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to put it on the background just to listen to it. Then I just, I sat down to eat and I was listening to it. And then I just forgot about everything else and sat down for a straight hour just listening to the episode, because I think it's such a unique experience to listen to a conversation of someone just like truly passionate about a subject.
Yeah.
And I think, Hugh was a perfect first episode, just because you can really hear the enthusiasm in his voice of the topic he was discussing, and it like radiates through my phone, and I'm like, I was so interested. And then about halfway through, I started kind of self-reflecting and started really thinking about the topic that he was explaining, and kind of just like reaching out of my comfort zone and doing things for self-growth. And I was like, oh my god, like this is good.
yeah, I, you know, big shout outs to Hugh for that episode. He's he's a good friend of ours. And like, I just find him to be like a really fun and interesting person. You've mm-hmm. met Hugh before, and he the way he came off in the podcast is the way that he comes off in real life, right? Like, he's a very genuine person. And I think that, just giving people the space the space to talk about what they're passionate about. And I think that my favorite thing about this is most of the people who I'm talking to are my friends. And actually, fun fact, I'm going to be talking to some people that I don't necessarily know IRL pretty soon. Okay. So that's going to be great.
Nice.
But giving people who are not necessarily quote unquote experts in a quote unquote field, the space to just talk about what excites them. Like, I think that's just like so dope. So if you all want to hear it, the episode is up. The podcast is called Yo! ! Let me tell you! ! And you can find it kind of anywhere that you listen to the podcasts. But anywhere that you listen to us, wherever you're listening to us right now, you can find it there. So, last announcement, Spotify is back up. It was my fault.
We had some issues.
I was like, okay, so I was actually like ready to like go Karen on Anchor. and then I was on Reddit because I was like, they're not helping me. And then someone's like, okay, you can do this and then go to Spotify and do this and then it'll work. And then I did it and I was like, oh shoot. So like, it was a setting that I actually intentionally turned off because I didn't understand. I didn't understand what it did. I thought it did something different. And so that was actually completely my fault. And there's, and then I understand there's no way for them to know that that was like the setting that was turned off or anything like that. So, I never yelled at anybody. I didn't get a chance to, so that's good. I never sent any really angry. I sent some like agitated like help tickets, but
yeah,
no angry things. But to anyone at Anchor who, yeah, but anyways, y'all are great. Let's start the show unless you have any announcements, Tony.
No, I mean, just to add on to the giveaway stuff. Yeah, we did give a sticker pack away, and I want to keep doing a couple giveaways every so often. I mean, we already have more people hitting us up now, wanting to promote their Etsy shops and wanting to give us stickers to give away as well. So, I mean, that's awesome. So
yeah,
I definitely want to do that because it's just like helping these like smaller pages kind of start promoting and start kind of getting a footing with their shops and stuff, and we have a pretty good fan base. Mm-hmm. So you know, hopefully we can start doing a couple more every so often.
Yeah. So like I said, follow us at the Aeropod on Twitter and Instagram just to know when we're doing stuff like that. So because mm-hmm. you might be the lucky winner. Anyways, so let's start. Oh, actually, funny story. So one of my friends tried to enter the giveaway, and they tagged me in the I'm like, yo, like, this is my giveaway, like, you can't tag me in my giveaway. Interesting. Like, okay, so fun fact, but let's start the show.
All right, episode 13, Venom of the Red Lotus.
Unlucky 13, because it's the last episode of the best season. Venom of the Red Lotus, dude, starts off basically the way that it's titled. Mm-hmm. Zaheer is basically explaining that he's going to poison Korra in the Avatar. Well, Korra, the first thing that happens is Korra says, none of you are going to survive. If I get out of here, none of you are going to survive. And I'm like, once again, Korra's not afraid to just, like, take people out at all.
Well, yeah, at this point, like, completely understandable.
right, like, yeah.
She thinks he murdered her father.
Right.
So she just saw the utter, like, just the absolute chaos that happened at the peak. Just saw her father fly off, and he even confirmed, just like at the end of last episode, that he's like, I also lost someone that I care about.
Mm-hmm.
So, they definitely think that he's dead. So she's in a absolute rage, and it's like, I'm getting out of here, and you're all done.
Yeah. And that's when Zaheer kind of explains that like their plan the entire time, well, not the entire time, their plan basically, because they could not kidnap her and brainwash her into doing their bidding when she was young, is, in fact, this could have been their plan all along. They just didn't get to have her do their bidding. Maybe they were going to poison her all along. But
I didn't think about that.
That could have been crazy. Like, they could have had her change like the world order,
yeah,
and then killed her.
Yeah, and then it'd be like, okay. And
now there's absolutely pure chaos, right? Their plan is basically to poison her to induce the Avatar state. It's like it is the safest way for them to induce the Avatar state. They don't kind of want to kill her before the Avatar state or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to induce the Avatar state, and because the poison is such like a slower process, they accomplish that. And essentially, dude, it's just like so electric, the things that he says. I think, what did he say? Though you, because they want to break the Avatar cycle and kill her while she's in the Avatar state. And he says, though you won't be reborn, your name will echo throughout history. Korra, the last Avatar. And I was like, but like it's the electric way that line got delivered, I was just like, shoot, dude, like, oh my gosh, I just can't. He readies up, like, he has Gazan and Minghua ready up as they administer the poison to Korra. Mm-hmm. And it's a metallic poison. It doesn't go through her mouth. They like literally, it's like,
yeah, they like metal bender, he like forces it through her skin.
Yeah, like you see him tightening her, you see her him tightening his fist, and you see Korra like screaming in pain. And
yeah,
and Janora is actually like spirit spying on them at the same time. Mm-hmm. Right. So she's kind of saying like, She's telling the other airbenders what's going to happen, and they formulate this plan to kind of break out. They
trick this guy. Yeah, and then we also see that Bumi and Kaya are with them. So,
are with them, yeah.
Yeah, so they did survive. We saw that at least. Mm-hmm. But they were captured.
Yeah, along with the rest of the airbenders. Mm-hmm. And so they trick the guard into, like, giving them water, but then they shoot his skirt up in the end, and like the keys come down and Milo and Opal. I'm like, Milo, Opal, y'all got something going on? Bolin got some competition? Because that was some chemistry I saw there. But all jokes aside, so they get the keys out, and Opal unlocks like one clasp, right? Mm-hmm. Like as Opal unlocks one clasp, they're like, what are you doing? Like they notice it, and I'm like, oh gosh, like they did it like too fast. They didn't wait, you know.
Yeah, you should have been watching the guard as you did it.
Right, just right. Like... yeah. Or anybody's like, don't do it yet, don't do it yet. They're just like, do it now. And then, all of a sudden, he gets like just blindsided by a boulder, and because Lin and Suyin, and Tanrock all come through, and we see Lin, Suyin, and Tanrock. Lin throws up. Lin pushes the rock up. Through. Suyin throws up the rock, right? Suyin throws up like the barrier. And then the last person who we didn't see, Asami, just kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and
I love
just
that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so Kai was able to lead all of them on Lefty to the cave where all this is going down. So they were able to infiltrate it, get in, and like you mentioned, like they were to earthbend the guards, but it was so funny to me that like out of everybody, Asami is the one that like immediately jumps into action right after she throws up the barrier and takes him out with her electric glove, and like it pans back and you see everybody like at the ready. You see Mako, Bolin, the Lin sisters, like everybody like at the ready, and she's like she already took him out.
Yeah, it's just so incredible. It's so incredible how just dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think that just everything about Asami, like the color palette that they give her, the character design that they give her, how dynamic they draw her, and so the way that you see, like, you know, she wears like kind of not a trench coat per se, but kind of almost like a trench coat. So the way that you see like the back of her coat kind of in the wind, her hair is like way far behind her, just illustrating how quickly she's moving, and how ready she was just to get down and like just like stop anything that was gonna go on. It's just so good, and they never fail to do her justice when they do give her big moments like that, and I really really enjoy it. I think the other cool thing is that I wish there were more moments like that. And I think that the fact that they give her the moments like this kind of sparingly makes it feel so much more believable, because, Asami versus like one or two like benders, like really, really quickly taking them out. Very believable. Asami versus like the entire Red Lotus, a lot less believable. So I think that they really do keep that. Oh, I'd love to see it. But I do think that they keep suspending the disbelief, because they put her in fights that she's definitely going to win.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, we get like a little emotional moment as Suyin thought that she lost Opal. She's like so happy to see her again. And Bolin just pushes Suyin out of the way. Like, yeah, I'm so happy to see you. And Jinora and Kai have their little moment as Jinora tells Tanrock, you don't have to search for her. I know exactly where they're holding her. I kind of skipped a couple of small little moments there, but that's basically what happened. I don't know if you would add anything to that.
Just in between that, a lot of stuff was happening to Korra.
Yeah, I was going to jump back to the Korra stuff from right there.
Yeah. So they forced the poison into her. They were at the ready to take her out once she got into the Avatar state, but they were able to see that she was kind of like going in and out of it. So it was almost like she was fighting the urge for her body to naturally go into it as like a fight or flight response.
Yeah.
So here's like, you know, give her time, like she can't fight it off forever. But eventually Korra goes into the Avatar state and she just breaks free. Like at first I was like, okay, like she gets around the platinum cuffs. by just ripping like chain
with the earth.
So I was like, okay, cool. And then no, but it's just like after that, she just snaps the other three.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, she's just breaking through pure platinum.
And but, so I like the way that she kind of like that they kind of like wrap the they wrap the chains around her limbs, three out of the four of her limbs, right? Or is there only one out of the four of her limbs?
It's one out of the four, yeah. Because the first one she ripped it out like with the earth piece.
Oh yeah, the other one's got a snap.
And she just the other one she just snapped. She's like, no, I got this, and bah, mm-hmm. just snaps them straight through.
Yeah, and to the point where like Korra, you know, she snaps them, she gets the chains around her arms, and then she like lava bends. Like she bends the lava at Gazan, who looks very scared of lava. And I'm like, you don't need to look that scared of lava. Like you that's literally why you're here. But okay.
I mean, that's the thing with lava bending, like regardless of if you can bend it, it's still such a terrifying thing, because even with Gazan in his bending, like normally it's so like out of everything that we see being bent with all the other elements, like it's the most like sporadic and uncontrolled. Like he's really like, even though it is like a liquid substance, but you see the way Gazan bends it, it's not like, you know, water bending with any substance of form or anything. It's really just like a splash in a general direction. So I feel like even though, yeah, he can bend it and he, you know, bends it in a direction, it's almost like he's just like, I wouldn't even call it bending or mastering it, because it's just really just like, I can manipulate it more than I can bend it. Yeah. Because it doesn't really seem like there's any rhyme or reason when he does it. It's more of just like, I'm creating it and destruction, go. Instead of having like ultimate control.
Yeah. No, I really agree with that. I think that it makes sense. If you think about the amount of energy that would be like being put into, like if you're controlling this, sorry, my dog was barking, but to like if you're trying to control lava, the amount of like energy, kinetic energy inside of lava is so much greater than the kinetic energy inside of earth, right? Like earth is so much more at rest than lava. Like you're trying to kind of contain all of that while you're also kind of moving it, so it makes a lot of sense. Which also, if you think about even like water bending and ice, like water and ice, right? Like they have a lot more precise movements with ice. They make these really like fine discs, they make these spears, they have like these really precise shots, where with water they're still a lot more precise because there's not a whole lot of energy in water compared to like lava, for example. But their movements are not necessarily quite as precise as they are when they're bending ice, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's why I think it's I would still be scared even if I was like bending in like lava. Even if I was a lava bender, I would still be terrified of like what I'm doing.
In my head though, I feel like I'll give him a pass, because it's like, oh shoot, this is the Avatar state. Let me get out of here. I think that makes sense too.
Oh wait, she didn't bend the lava?
Are you sure?
She like air blasted it at him.
I don't know. I don't know, Tony. I watched this
today. It was just like all this wind. It was like,
no, she was swinging back and forth with air, but I believe that she like actually like bent the lava.
Okay, we'll find out next time.
Next time on. No, I mean, even if she didn't bend the lava, I mean, we've seen people bend lava in Avatar State before, right? So it's possible.
But I mean, that's not something that anyone's ever brought up. That's the thing. I was like, did she lava bend? Is that something she did? I think she might have just like air blasted it at him.
Just because no one's ever brought it up doesn't mean we're not the first people to discover it. Anyways, but yeah, they get like all the way out of the way, and Zaheer like flies out. He just like flies out and escapes. And Korra flies out after him.
Jet propulsion, straight up like fire blasts her way through, and she's flying.
Yeah.
Something that we've only seen really with I mean, like we've seen short bursts from different firebenders like Azula and other people.
Ozai was flying for quite a long time, but he was comet boosted.
That's what I was about to say, like without the comet. So with like, we've seen instances, but it's just like very short, like propulsion. And I think in the comics, Zuko's been able to do it as well. But this is just like full like comet, like level, like just flying through the air.
I mean, I feel like the Avatar should be able to access comet level powers in the Avatar state, especially if you're about to die. But, like,
I mean, we haven't seen that. Like, even with like other Avatar, like, you know, we've never seen like those crazy, outrageous, like blasts of fire with anyone that's been in the, like, in the Avatar state, like comet, like level stuff. And then that also, what you said was in the Avatar state, since she's disconnected from her past lives, and the Avatar state is just like the knowledge and power of the past lives, is this just her strength mixed with just Rava's strength and no one else's?
See, so I've done a lot of thinking about the Avatar state without I've done a lot of thinking about what the Avatar state without past lives would mean. Mm-hmm. And I'm not entirely sure. We've been taught that it's the knowledge of all of your past lives and being able to use the techniques and basically ask them for help. It's basically like if you're playing an RPG video game and you like die, they ask like, do you want the internet to help you out? And you're like, yeah. That's basically what it is. But also if I'm thinking about like the lore that we've learned from here, like the first time we ever see something similar to the Avatar state.
Mm-hmm.
Was when Juan was trying to stop like his people and the spirits from like fighting each other at that one moment.
Yes.
And then Rava for the first time like went inside of Juan and he was like, we need to hold it, or not went inside, but like, we need to hold it, it's working. Like at that moment, all of his bending was stronger than it was when he was just holding one power at a time. When Rava was inside of him, his bending was stronger. So I also kind of believe that the Avatar state is kind of like a one-up mushroom for the Avatar in the sense that like, not only do you access like the abilities of your past lives, but you can also amplify your own abilities. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Cause that's what I was saying. Like this is her strength mixed with Rava's strength.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Uh huh.
So I think that's even, that alone is an incredible feat, because we throughout this battle that we're about to go down, we see her do some crazy stuff.
Oh yeah.
And it's really amazing to think that like this isn't like, you know, what Aang did in the season finale, series finale, where he had the knowledge of all these hundreds of past avatars with the comet mixture and everything. Like, this is straight just her and Rava, and she's able to, you know, do these crazy things as she has poison that's slowly killing her inside of her.
I mean that's the crazy part. Man, both of the fights that happen there's really like two fights that happen. There's like the brothers and then there's Korra, and I want to talk about them both, and part of me wants to just jump into the Korra fight. The other part of me is like, the Korra fight is like so much cooler than like the Bolin and Mako fight. I don't know. What do you think?
We can. I mean, the Mako and Bolin fight's really short, so we can just do that first.
But it's still kind of cool.
I mean, it's cool. I never said it wasn't cool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's really short.
So like, essentially, when Tanrok, Bolin, and Mako kind of get to the area where Korra is being held, like, this is where she's already full Avatar state by this point. Like, she's already gone after Zaheer. Tanrok kind of runs after where they're going, and then Bolin and Mako take on Gazan and Mingua, which is like, I've never seen this before, right? It's never happened. No, but so they get split up, and Mako gets matched up against Mingua, and Bolin goes up against Gazan, and I think that that's a pretty fair matchup, with the fact that like Bolin's the only one who really can defend against Gazan's attacks. There's no one else who can really do anything like that.
Yeah. So that's what, so the fight last time was so difficult for Bolin, was he mentioned last fight, that he's like, I'm just giving him like ammunition, like I'm just giving him stuff to be able to hurt me back, because any rocks that he would throw at him, he was just turning into lava and throwing back, splashing it back at Bolin. So this time around, it was a little bit more of an even playing field, even though, I mean, like we mentioned, like, I don't feel like Gazan has like this mastery over Lava Bunny, but he still, you know, has way more practice than what Bolin has.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still, you know, able to go like toe-to-toe with him.
Yeah, yeah, Bolin's able to defend against the attacks for a second. But let's go back to Mako really quick, because I think Mako's fight ends first. So Mako and Ming Hua are kind of fighting. Mako is, I mean, they had a little bit of the element of surprise, but Mako is kind of chasing her down. Like she's, mm-hmm. it's interesting because she's able to defend and attack while running. But Mako is kind of on his A game today. And so he's able to dodge. He's able to attack. I don't think nearly as well as she is, but the fact that she chose to run away while attacking, and the fact that Mako can focus on chasing while attacking, and he doesn't have to like focus on two things at once, like attacking for him is closing the distance anyways,
yeah.
Whereas she's trying to do two things at once. She slips and falls, and so Mako's like, I've got you, and she's like, no you don't. And she jumps down into like a little like crater, a little cavity, and Mako follows her, and it's full of water.
Yeah. So that's why he finally had the upper hand, because as he was fire blasting her, like she was essentially depleting her water until the point where she had no arms.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess she was able to sense that there was water nearby or something, right?
She probably knows. She probably knew the cave relatively well, too.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was able to get down and then do the octopus. Like
the nightmare fuel that was.
Yeah, that was kind of terrifying.
She's at the center of like all of the really scary things that have happened. Like Ming Hua is like one of the more scary people in this group. Also, remember when she drove a car with like two like water? Anyways. But yeah, she's just like full on Doc Ock on Mako, and really if Mako didn't like find a way out quickly, he probably would have died. But quickly finds like two rocks that he can kind of stretch his body between where he's not on the water, and just as quickly as he possibly can, just like lightning blasts the water.
Yeah.
And electrocutes Ming Hua. So I hope it was salt water in there, because fresh water doesn't really conduct that kind of current. so it would have had to have been salt water. So they must be near the ocean somewhere. If that's salt water. That's all I've got to say.
Okay. It's so interesting that that for Mako, like there isn't a charge up for his electricity.
Uh-huh.
Like we've seen it in last series.
Yeah.
Like, we normally see there's like this big like dramatic charge up to be able to shoot in this lightning, but for Mako, I mean in instances when he went up against Amon, like he was able to do it when he was being bloodbent, and then in this case, like there wasn't a charge up, it was just like a singular blast into the water.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's just because of more practice.
So when me and Charisse were watching this episode, she said the same thing. She was like, "Whoa, how is he able to do that so fast?" And I kind of equated it to like if you think back to like I wasn't around back then, but like the 1970s, right? like okay, so American children have been running the mile for like however long anyone can remember. But in the 70s, like a 15-year-old running a mile in like 7 minutes, like people said, like, oh, that's absolutely impossible. There's no way that a 15-year-old can run the mile in like 7 minutes. It's pretty common practice these days. Like, I don't remember my mile times. It was probably sometime around like 9 minutes or something like that. But like back in like the 70s, like miles at like 9 minutes for high schoolers were super uncommon, and nowadays like that's kind of like the benchmark that they try to get you to run a mile at in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, yeah, it just became like more and more like kids got better and better at running the mile as we as we get to teach kids better running techniques, as people who are really, really good at running become coaches and teach people how to run better, and then those people become like influential in terms of education and fitness. So it doesn't surprise me that after like, if we have gone through this giant change from like average 13-minute mile to an average of like an 8-minute mile in high school in 40 years, that like over the course of like 76 years, the fact that you had to take like 10 seconds to like build up your lightning, to the point where now people just like work in like lightning sweatshops in Republic City and provide power for the entire, and also that's like another thing, he's probably more well practiced, but he just does that all day, or he was just doing that all day back in season one. So it doesn't surprise me that like all of the benders, like the echelon of the benders in this world is higher than the echelon of the benders like Mako is a gifted bender, and so was Azula. I think that Azula is a much more gifted bender than Mako, but I still wouldn't believe. I think that if Azula was here in this day and age, like she would be just even better because of like what's it called? The efficiency, what's the word where you make something super efficient? This is going to bother me. The optimization, of like bending techniques and whatnot. So.
Yeah, that's what came to mind at first, which was just that like essentially you're having more practice with a skill, provides you the ability to just jump into it so much more quicker. Mm-hmm. And then for your mile story, it's the 4-minute barrier, and then that was thought to be impossible until one man did it, and then within the following 12 months, even high schoolers were able to beat that 4-mile. Like limit and start running miles in 3 minutes.
Okay, something like that. I guess I'm like half. It still makes sense, okay?
You're slow.
It still makes sense. Yo, I'm not gonna say I'm fast at long distance. I'm like decently fast in like short bursts, but like long distance is not my thing. Absolutely not. So
yeah. So that actually reminds me though, that it's a theory that a lightning bending was essentially was a skill that was led to believe that it was only taught and kept within like the royal fire family. That's why we only see like the like Ozai, Iroh, Wozuko was able to redirect it, wasn't able to learn it. Azula are the only ones that we ever see be able to lightning bend.
Yeah.
So, and then with the Kyoshi book, it kind of goes into the lore of a lightning bender that was imprisoned and was asked to be kept alive by the royal fire family at the time to study why he was able to do this crazy technique.
Mm-hmm.
So it's led to believe that they studied him, that they want to keep him alive to study him. And then once they found out like how he was able to do what he did, which was lightning bend, they only kept it within the royal families.
That makes sense too. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's why it's like the transition between, like the end of the first series and to Korra, why there's that huge jump is that like Zuko would be like, oh no, this is a skill that we should be sharing with the world.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, instead of him keeping it within his own family, he was able to start teaching, like, not keep it a secret at least. And that's why we see, you know, people just, like you mentioned, like, just in sweatshops, and, like, conducting electricity and making extra money.
Well, also, like, the thing is, like, you don't necessarily have to be super good at something to teach it, right? Mm-hmm. People in the NBA like have coaches, and those coaches weren't always in the NBA or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, you can be really good at observing and teaching and understanding the concepts while also not physically being able to do them yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think that Zuko probably would have been able to teach some people how to lightning bend.
That's the thing. It's just like going back to the mile thing. It's like, once you know it's possible, once you know, like there's this skill is something that a firebender can do, that just opens the possibilities of you being able to even, you know, grasp and learn it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. But getting back to the fights, because we're going to have a long one today. But getting back to the fights, Bolin and Mako. Mako finishes off Minghua and quickly gets back to Bolin, who is having a hard time. He's able to hold his own for a second, but then we come back and we see him just running away. It reminded me, I don't remember what the moment was of Sokka, but there was a moment where everybody's like fighting. And we see Sokka screaming, but it's actually him just running away from someone who's like chasing him or something like that. I don't remember
this moment. I don't remember.
I'm trying to think. someone out there knows the moment that I'm thinking of, but it's when he's training with
yes.
Yeah, with Master Pan Dao, and like he's like fighting, he's trying fighting to like
butler.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, he comes out of, he comes out of the bamboo, and he's just running. He's just running and screaming. Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking when he's fighting the butler, and, like, he disarms him, and then he just starts running away, and the butler's kind of just chasing him, too.
No. This is after Pan Dao decided, like, oh, I'm going to pretend to kill you. And, yeah. But, no, still really good. Mako comes in, and so Bolin's getting a little bit overwhelmed, and then Gazan's about ready to fire off some of like the final shots until Mako kind of comes in and helps out. And so the two of them are able to kind of hold him back. Mm-hmm. And then this is the thing that I spoiled last episode. Gazan said, if I'm going down today, you're coming with me. I'm never going back to prison. And he slams on the ground, and then he like puts his arms out, and like the entire building starts to collapse. And he also starts pulling lava out of the walls.
Yeah. So that's the first time we've kind of seen that. It was like a distance, like lava bending. Like in every other time that he's bent lava, we see it that it's very close proximity or like even like right in front of him. Uh-huh. And then like he splashes it around to kind of spread it out. This is the first time we've ever seen like from a fairly good distance, because like the walls were pretty far out.
Yeah.
That he was able to, you know, start manipulating the earth into lava. So I was like, that's something we've never really seen before, and it's kind of like the last time we see it from
see it again like that. Yeah, there's not enough years left in this show that Bolin gets to master it that well. But Bolin and Mako just kind of like book it out of there because they're about to collapse. And they make it out in time to see the end of Korra's fight, which we will jump back to the beginning of now. After like maybe a couple of last comments or anything. Do you have any last comments about it?
No.
Yeah. Okay. So Korra is Fire Lord Ozai, and So what I want to point out about this fight. We can talk about all the details about it if we wanted to. I think if we did, we'd be here forever. But I think I want to talk about overview, and then we can like pick out moments as long as we end kind of where that fight ended.
Yeah.
But what I really want to point out about this fight is something that I alluded to last episode. This fight is essentially like Sozin's Comet, Avatar Aang, those two episodes. But Sozin's Comet is like the third episode, right? I can't remember. Maybe it's not.
Sure.
But it's part 3 and 4 it's part 3 and 4 of the finale of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. This fight is, like I said, like kind of mentioned. I don't know why I always talk about Star Wars here, but I just think it's a really good analog. But like I feel like Star Wars, when you look at that, people are like, I want to see something different. I want to see something cool, and it's really impossible to like please Star Wars fans, because if you do something different, they're going to be like, this is not Star Wars. And then if you do something the same, they'll be like, we already saw that. So you have to have this like really like important balance of like new and old, like old ideas, but with like new themes. And I think it was like so perfectly executed here, because every single shot, every single scene felt like it was reminiscent of that fight. Like everything felt so like similar. But what it meant, who it was, and how it was happening felt so different. In the sense of, like, Korra and Aang are both in the Avatar state. But the reason why they're in the Avatar state are two completely different reasons.
Yeah.
For Aang, it was his saving grace, and for Korra, it might be her deathbed, right?
Yeah, for all avatars to come, like, it's just done.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that aspect of it. There's this aspect of, I mean, just like the landscape and the scene. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. we're like flying around. There's just like some random rocks in some places, like some giant rock pillars. That doesn't really happen on planet Earth very often. Like, oh, conveniently there's some water right here, right? Like it, the only thing that they could have done to make it more similar is to make Korra like encase herself in a giant atom nucleus. but she didn't, and I'm kind of glad that she didn't.
Yeah.
It would have been a little too much.
I love how this fight starts, though, as they like fly through the air and we catch up with them. It's almost like a drone shot of mm-hmm. like how they're following Zaheer, and they move into Korra and back to Zaheer as they're just like zooming through the air. Like yeah. it's such a, instead of just like a wide pan shot, it's like it really felt like a drone shot as like the camera was like following them around in the sky, and you never really had a sense for a couple seconds of like what's up, what's down, which like what direction they're heading in.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that like it feels like neither character in this exchange, in this interaction, is like ahead of the other one, right? Like mm-hmm. we have Korra being at kind of like the most powerful that we've seen her, chasing down Zaheer. Zaheer is definitely on the run, but Zaheer's not necessarily out of control of this fight. He has mm-hmm. the poison on his side. He has the fact that she can't really control her actions. He has the fact that she's not refined in her actions, right?
Yeah.
I think that something that's really interesting about Korra's avatar state here, and I'm gonna compare it back to Aang's again really quick, was because like it felt like Aang was like, it was unclear as to whether or not Aang was in control of his actions or if he was not in control of his actions when he went into the avatar state. Mm-hmm. Until the end, we find out like, yeah, he was in control. And we learn that at the very end. While Korra is very, very out of control, very, very raw. But that is who Korra is. Like her fight in this avatar state is a literal pure interpretation of like who she is as a person. She's raw, she's kind of like unchecked, mm-hmm. she's strong, she's powerful, and this avatar state does the best job of like capturing her character in this real primal rage.
Yeah, I mean, but that can even be attributed to the fact that Aang had a connection to his past lives, so it's just like his moves, his attacks were more refined because it's coming from a place of knowledge, of mastery. Well, we know with Korra, she just has a crazy power boost, and she's, you know, fighting out of pure rage.
Yeah, but that's what I think I like about this fight. On that aspect, I think I like that about this fight more than I like it about the previous fight with Ozai, mm-hmm. which is because like, I don't think that the Avatar State is saying anything about Aang's character whatsoever. Where I think that the Avatar State is saying everything about Korra's character in this moment.
Definitely,
and I think that's like one really, really big important thing about this fight. I think that we also learn like ice is strong against flying, just like in Pokemon. Like Zaheer's like leg gets frozen.
Yeah, that was a little bit confusing for me. I was like, oh, it's like Zaheer has unlocked unassisted flight.
Yeah,
but if you freeze his foot, it's just downfall. He can't fly.
Right. Like so. Like the idea is like, okay, maybe it's. I was like, maybe it's something that like, it's something that like pulls him back to the earth, right? But I'm like, nah, this guy's wearing clothes, right? Like he
just has to be naked.
He has to be naked to fly. He has to be naked to fly. That's what I'm thinking right now, right? But like, we obviously know that's not true. Unless like, yeah, you know, Professor X like made him some clothes that like match up with his whatever. What are you saying?
I said, yeah, that was a little confusing for me. That it's just like a frozen foot was something that I would figure like maybe he wasn't able to control his flight pattern as much, but it was just like completely, he was just plummeting to the mm-hmm. floor.
Mm-hmm. And he, I mean, that dude's got some strong knuckles though. Like you saw him like, did you see him just like punch that ice off his foot? I was like, okay, that guy's got some strong.
I think he might've open palmed hit it actually.
Maybe. Really?
I want to say yes.
It wasn't.
Which would be way more efficient.
Which would be like a chop, right? Or did you think he like
tiger claw, like open palm.
Maybe he did.
Curled back.
I know it wasn't a punch. It wasn't a fist for sure.
Yeah.
I know his hand was open, but I'm not entirely sure the way. It almost to me looked like a karate chop. So there's that. But also the way that Zaheer is attacking Korra, he's kind of under the impression that he can't touch her. He can't really touch her. He can't really get that close to her, and he doesn't want to risk it. So the way that you see him attacking her is essentially like he flies past her and kind of like
puff. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, like you mentioned, he has a poison on his side. So as he was falling, he was just like, he was so vulnerable, but Korra couldn't, you know, continue to attack because of the poison started taking over.
Yeah.
And she had to just like plummet to like a cliffside. So at that point, it's just like, it's just biding his time. Like for him, it's just, I can, you know, go physically attack her, but it would be smarter to just, like you mentioned, just like, he's like zooming by her and like tossing her around, as a poison kind of just takes effect.
Yeah. To the point where he even like, he pushes her like off of the side of a cliff. And she kind of falls, and you see her trying to catch herself. You see her trying to maybe like airbend a little bit to cushion her fall, to like try to like earthbend to like kind of catch herself. And she's not able to really like pull off any of that, to the point where she tries to airbend to break her fall, and she just doesn't. She takes like the brunt of that impact right like on her feet. And that shot goes up through her legs, and she just kind of falls over. And it's at this point that Zaheer kind of like props her up. And tries to kind of suffocate her in the same way that he suffocated the Earth Queen.
Yeah, he was trying to make that vacuum around her head again. But luckily, a few minutes before all this went down, Jinora was able to get all the... everybody was just on the floor, and it really wasn't anything that they can do. Mm-hmm. Like, Kai was like, oh, I'll take Lefty and I'll go help her.
Yeah.
Bro, what are you going to do, man? Like, honestly.
Yeah, there's like Lefty's not as fast as Zaheer is.
Yeah, yeah. Jinora was able to reason with her father. It's just like, well, you know, like there hasn't been this many airbenders all in one place for such a long time, which is like everyone follow me, form a circle, and then they all start whirling the air around and start forming a like tornado. Mm-hmm. And by the time Zaheer was trying to suffocate Korra, they were able to like have a fully formed tornado like heading in their direction.
Yeah, to the point where Zaheer tries to fly away with Korra, and he just can't outrun the cyclone.
Yeah.
So he ends up like dropping her. I think it mostly by accident he ends up dropping her, but he's like, geez, I just gotta get out of here and I'll make my next strike. But Korra gets like the last bit of her consciousness, and good thing she had that chain too, because she lassos him, and with the last kind of bit of consciousness, kind of like pulls him down to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
She slams him down pretty hard. So he's done. They kind of encase him in earth. Just the same way that Ozai was kind of encased in earth after when Aang kind of took his bending away.
Yeah, fairly similar.
And so Korra is now like on her last bit of consciousness. And this is the Korra that we've seen fight really not only just today, but for three seasons. One thing that we didn't mention earlier on, and I kind of wanted to bring it up here. And I want to bring it up a little bit later too. Is the Korra who fought Amon, who fought Unalaq, who fought Batu, who fought the Red Lotus. She saw them in visions as the poison was taking effect over her body. She saw Zaheer turn into Amon. She saw Ghazan turn into Unalaq. And she saw Minghua turn into Batu. And basically all of them were telling her how much she had failed as an avatar. This is a message that she had gotten from... She'd gotten from President Raiko. She had gotten it from, at times, like her allies, like Tenzin, Lin, people who she's taken those messages from, whether or not they've said it, right? To the point where she looks up at her dad. She tries to reach out, and it's like, oh my gosh, is she dead? And Jinora kind of reminds them, like, yo, the metal's poison. Like, come on, let's go.
Yeah, she seemingly like died in her dad's arms.
Yeah. But Lin's able to not Lin, Suyin is actually able to to bend all of the poison out. So much poison came out and essentially saved Korra's life. Yeah. Because Zaheer like even has this moment of like laughing and says like the poison, it's already taken effect. You can't save her now. We win. And yeah, Suyin saves her, throws the poison on the ground, and Korra like wakes up for a second and then just passes out again.
Yeah.
We see Zaheer. I think that the other last kind of mirror to the final episode of Avatar: The Last Airbender was, you know, Ozai was like, "I am the Phoenix King," had his last little thing, and then they kind of just shut him up. No, they say Phoenix Bolin. King of getting his butt whooped, but Bolin just puts a sock
in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really, really intense. Really intense battle, like really just like crazy emotional. Like again, that the storytelling through the fight, the emotionality through the fight. Like I felt like there was higher stakes here than I did maybe, you know, watching that episode the first time. It would have been like 4 or 5 years prior, maybe like 3 or 4 years prior when Aang fought Ozai. I was like, yo, I don't think the world's gonna end today, but like I didn't remember whether or not there was gonna be another season at that point, and I was like, does Korra die here?
Oh yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, it's just her actions were driven by pure emotion, and it was so chaotic in the way that we, you know Korra to be. So I feel like that's why, like, I don't know, it felt so much more real to see her fighting and that poison taking effect and her still trying to do something to stop Zaheer. And then even to the point where like you see her kind of just like pass out in her dad's arms. It's just like, oh, did she just die?
I mean, and to be fair, there was a lot of did they just die this season. Like that happened to us a few times. I mean, it was convincing every single time because I think that the show just did a really good job of building it up. Mm-hmm. We fast forward to 2 weeks later here. 2 weeks later, we see Asami is kind of doing Korra's hair, kind of getting her ready for a special occasion. And Asami's really trying to cheer her up, saying, if you need anything at all, just, like, let me know. And she says, like, no one expects you to be ready. It's only been 2 weeks. You've been through a lot. But I think it's also really important that we get through this day for Jinora. Korra's like, yeah, no, you're right. Let's do it. Come on, let's go. And you know, we see Korra like being able to greet people. We see like Raiko saying like, I have so much respect for you. Thank you so much for everything that you've done. It's like, dude, go away. Like no one wants you here right now. Like literally no one wants you here. Right
Who
now.
Invited you? No one invited you.
Lin's given Korra like a hang in there kid. Before she like elevates her up, Milo sits on her lap.
She's able to elevate her up the stairs, on her wheelchair.
Milo sits on Korra's lap, and that's something that that made Korra smile. It was actually the only thing that had made Korra smile at that moment. Up until then, Korra hadn't smiled yet. Also, looks like she hasn't slept in like months, and it's only been 2 weeks. But yeah, Korra didn't smile at all except for that moment. I just like that because we know that Korra and Milo are like they're like little BFFs, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, they go up into the chamber where Tenzin and the acolytes and the other airbenders are all waiting.
Yeah, but even before that, the president was kind of just like...
Oh, to Tenzin or to...
Yeah, to Tenzin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's kind of just like, I believe that... I mean, like, he was kind of just mentioning, like, there's still, like, a lot of threats, and she doesn't seem to be ready to be able to take on the role of the Avatar. Mm-hmm. And you kind of just see like Tenzin like thinking and kind of pondering that over of like, you know, the world still needs someone. But Korra can't really fulfill that role as of right now. So that's why before, as we get into the chambers and everything, Tenzin kind of announces that the airbenders will go back to their nomadic roots and wander the earth. But in
in pursuit of like bringing peace and bringing
there you go.
Like in pursuit of bringing peace and like helping people out wherever they might be, because there's going to be a lot of people in trouble.
Until Korah recovers.
Yeah, and so like he says that in his speech, like we're gonna be nomads again. We're going to bring good fortune and jolly and everything like that.
And jolly.
Yeah, we're Santa Claus. And then Korah, and he says like. And he turns to Korah and he thanks her for everything that she's done. And we don't see her smile. We get like a little like half kind of like smile. And then Tenzin says, and now it's time to anoint the new master who's going to help lead mm-hmm. us into the new age. And that's when we see Junora like pull off her hood. And she has like her arrows, and she's bald, and I'm gonna save the last little piece of that for the end, because the airbenders they make this wind, they do like the incense. Jinora gives a big hug to Tenzin and everything like that. It's a really, really great and emotional moment. And then we look over at Korah, and she's just completely broken. In her chair, unable to walk, and she just sheds a tear, and that's the very end of the episode. And for Korah, who just saw a vision of all of the people who she had ever fought, who just talked to the person who said that she's useless and doesn't belong in the city, who not only got Rava ripped out of her by her uncle, who almost wasn't able to stop 10,000 years of darkness, who almost not only lost the connection to the previous avatars, but almost was the avatar to sever the line completely. And all the while, who's only ever wanted to be the avatar, while all these other people say like, wow, some avatar, like, I wish we had an avatar like Aang. These kind of like things that are kind of implied by the things that people say, like Aang was a great avatar. He shows up all the time. For Jinora to take off her hood and be the new master that's going to lead us into the new age, while Korra's unable to do anything, and for her to look exactly like that person who she's always being compared to, it's just like kind of like the last, like, nail in the coffin. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It hurts. It hurts a lot.
Yeah. It's all of that, and I mean, this is just one more instance where she's lost who she is.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this before when she lost her bending originally, but again, she isn't able to fulfill her role as the Avatar, and this is all she wants to be. And it really felt like early on, like her father, Tenzin, were kind of just trying to stop her from being what she wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just being the Avatar, but now she's bound to a wheelchair for at least 2 weeks as of what we know.
Yeah.
And she's needing other people to fulfill her duty of protecting the world and keeping the peace, because she isn't able to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So once again, we see her in a vulnerable state of not being who she needs to be.
Yeah.
And having that identity be ripped from her and not really knowing when or if she'll ever get that back.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that like it's trauma with a capital T at its biggest, right? I think that I want to address a comment that we got on our Instagram. And I think that we talked about like why people should watch Korra. We've talked about there's been like some negativity towards it and everything like that. And I actually think that somebody brought up a point that's, I think it's a fair point, but I want to talk about why I don't agree with it. And I think that this person's entitled to their opinion, and I appreciate them commenting this. They said that they felt that Korra was a pretty decent show, but that they felt that the show spent too much time on Korra's weak mental state. And I think that to me, that comment is, I respect that comment a lot more than when people say like Korra is annoying. I think that because it gives a reason why that person didn't find this show as interesting or engaging, because it felt like this character was weak. And I guess my counter argument to that is I think that that's supposed to be the point. I think that that's the entire point of the show, because like Korra is not weak in any sense of the word. I think that like she proves that she's not weak in any sense of the word. She's the most like she's like so physically capable. She's so like even like really like mentally like has so much mental fortitude that the fact that they spend so much time on this trauma that she continues to go through, I think that makes the character really real. And so that's why, you know, I appreciate that comment a lot. I think I also disagree with it just because I think that the fact that they spent so much time on it made her feel so much more human, so much more connected, makes me feel a lot more connected to her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's way more of a relatable character.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was the point. It was this, like, superhuman, super, like, idol of Avatar that she wants to be and she feels like she is, and you're bringing her down to the human level of she's still going through all these problems. She's not I don't know, disconnected. Like I like Aang, like for me Aang, I didn't relate to him too much as I did with all these stories with Korra. Uh-huh. And that's because it was just so many more real issues of her identity, of trauma, of all these different things, of problematic situations or being compared to someone else.
Yeah. I guess like the way that I would describe it is like to me, it doesn't seem like it's a weak mental state. It's a mental state that's been grinded down and broken over time. Right. And I think that like, if you compare it to like a table, right? Like you don't call a table with two legs weak. You call a table with two legs broken. And that mm-hmm. table needs some help and some fixing, right? Yeah. Like you need a third leg on a table for it to hold anything up. And I think that that's like the real beauty in this show is that we see the legs break. Like actually we literally saw the legs break mm-hmm. when Korra took that fall. And like we got to focus on her building it back up again, because that's going to happen. That's not, you know, everyone's not going to have a fall and like almost not save the world and become like paralyzed or anything like that. Like everybody doesn't go through that. Right. But everybody goes through their own trials, and it's not about like the way that it's about how you come back from them. Right. It's mm-hmm. about how you decide that you're not going to be defined by the bad stuff that happens to you. And I think that's what's the beauty of Korra's story. So I really like the way that we ended this off. We ended off on like this note of like uncertainty and like really uneasy. And it's really unfortunate that like it's the last part of the episode. And I remember waiting for so long, like, oh my gosh, that's such a we don't get cliffhangers in Avatar, right? Like that's not a thing until now it is, yeah. Right? So we don't get cliffhangers at the end of seasons or anything like that. Not big ones at least.
I mean, it's not like Aang was almost died at one of the end of the seasons or anything.
I guess we do get cliffhangers. You're right. But anyways, Tony, I think that we both are probably in agreement about what this episode gets. If you want to count to three and say it.
Okay.
One, three, two. Oh. Oh, wait. Okay. All right.
I give it a three.
Out of two. And then a one. 10. I give it a 10.
Yeah, I give this a 10.
Yeah, it's just poetry in motion. It's so mm-hmm. it's so beautiful. It's animated beautifully. It's the story is told beautifully. I think that we get a really good bookend that gets me excited to see what happens next.
And just like that, we're done with season 3.
Yeah, everybody, thank you so much for sticking with us through this one. Not like you weren't enjoying it along the way or anything like that, but just amazing that like after almost two and a half years. Yeah. Like so long, like we've been doing this for a while. A good chunk of my adulthood at this point, like just blown away for all of you who've been sticking around from day one. Just really, really, sorry, my dog's barked. Sorry. Really grateful for all of you who have just been hopping on this week. And this is your first episode. Like, Welcome. You know, like we really appreciate everybody who listens. So y'all are the reason why we keep doing this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's all I got to say, right?
Yeah, we're done. We've awesome, gone over an hour.
I got to, yeah, it's 10:45 p.m. I got to edit this episode so I can get it up by the morning. All right, everybody. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we will catch you all next time. Bye.
Bye.